Hi, everybody. This is a brand new podcast. And the idea around this podcast is that we're going to interview founders from different startups and to basically show how many different people are building all sorts of different companies, different voices, different ways of looking at stuff. And the format is we're going to try and start with asking the founders some personal questions, what drives them to do this. Then ask them some questions about their startup, and then kind of ask them questions about the market they're in, and what gets them excited about that market, etc. What, you know, how they're trying to sort of change the world. We're going to try and keep the questions consistent, always ask the same ones, so you, dear listener, can get an idea of comparing different people who are doing, you know, different things in this space, and just to see all the different things that contribute towards a healthy, thriving tech ecosystem. Today, we're going to have a slightly different way of doing this, though, because we've got a very special guest here. We'll go through the initial questions as just described. But additional to that, today's guest reached out to me a couple of months ago with a kind of specific topic they had in mind that they wanted to talk about. And once we've gone through those basic questions, we'll talk about that topic in more detail. So, all that said, I'm very, very happy to say hi to Omar Tufail, who's sitting opposite me, and we're doing this face-to-face, from the startup Loopsio. Thanks for coming, Omar.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for having me. I'm really excited to be here in person to get a chat with you.
Cool. We've been talking for ages already, so, yeah. So we've still got something to talk about on live mics. So let me just start then. So what's your background? How did you get into this game?
The tech game. How did you get into the tech game? So, I mean, tech is just interesting to me, as is, I'm sure, to a lot of people, in that it allows you to have an outsized impact, I think, and it involves so many different parts of a person in terms of creativity is involved, logic is involved, business. There's a whole bunch of things that you can bring to the tech game, mm-hmm. and feel that you're engaged on multiple levels. So, I mean, computer games and just the tech scene in the States and all over the world, it's an exciting space. And so I felt drawn by that, by the people running these companies and making massive changes around the world. So, and sci-fi, there's an interest in sci-fi as well. So there's a whole bunch of stuff of why I'm cool in tech.
And I would look at you as a kind of tech co-founder. You've got a computer science background as well?
Yeah. So, I studied computing science at Glasgow, but as we were talking about when we came in here, my real education was in my mom and dad's shop. And that's where I learned the real world. How do you interact with people? How do you manage the customer? How do you create a proposition? There's so much I learned there, and that's what I'll go back to. That was my real education. And then, later on I did go to Glasgow Uni and do computing science.
Cool. And what made you build a startup?
Man, it's always something I wanted to do. So it's not my first, what do they call it, rodeo?
Yeah.
It's not really a term I use, but that's how it's described, right? Yeah, exactly. So it's not the first thing I've tried to start up. Neither is it the first thing I've put out there. So I've always been making things and putting things out there. So this is the latest in a long line. I would almost say it's like a Darwinian process we were talking about earlier. I'm getting better at building these things, mm-hmm. and so this latest one is shall I get into it?
Yeah, well, no, okay. So I'm trying to bring some slowly, format to this. So what's your startup called?
It's called Loopsio.
Loopsio, okay. And what would you say, what's the elevator pitch for Loopsio?
The elevator pitch is it's a student driven tech agency.
Okay.
That pairs students from Scottish universities who are doing computing-related degrees with customers who are looking for early-stage software. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay, cool. Okay, so you're taking, well, I guess I'm saying young, but there'll be different ages, I guess.
Predominantly young, though, yeah.
Predominantly young. who've got skills, got some understanding, some knowledge, some education in this.
Yeah.
And you're connecting them to people who want to build software stuff, like products, I guess. What kind of range of things do you build?
So we are best placed to build prototypes, okay. Early version ideas. So there's a wee catchy, cheesy phrase that I say, we take people from PowerPoint to prototype.
Nice. Chapeau.
Do you like that?
Yeah, it's very good. Very good.
No, dude, I've got a whole list of those. I've got a whole line of those kind of lines, right? But yeah, that's what we do, because where we see the gap in the market is that I'm not here to compete with traditional agencies.
Yeah.
They do what they do and they do an amazing job.
Yeah.
But they'll charge you 10K upwards off it for it, at least.
Yeah.
Which is fine. Or what's the other option for someone, say, that goes through, you know, an incubator or an accelerator and has done business model canvas to death and lean startup, mm-hmm. and they know who their customer is and USP and blah, blah, blah. And now they want to build the bloody thing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do if you're not cool, if you're not a tech, if you don't have a tech co-founder or you don't have a tech background yourself, you're almost left to your own devices. It's almost like, do you go to an agency? Do you go abroad? Do you outsource it?
Yeah.
How do you even know what to ask for?
Yeah, I mean, I was a non-technical founder, so I know exactly all the hells you're talking about.
There is also the no-code option as well,
which
I know you love. But
what's your view on that?
Look, we use no-code tools to build solutions for customers who can't be bothered doing it themselves or don't know where to start.
Yeah.
So we built an AR application on like literally 2K, which was a budget that was not going to get that person anywhere with an agency.
Yeah,
and if they went abroad, I don't know, maybe it would be hit or miss, right?
Yeah.
So we researched, we said, listen, your budget's next to nothing. We're not building something from the ground up using AR tech from Apple and Android. There's this tool, there's no code. Why don't you go use that? And they were like, listen, can you do it for us? And we're like, yeah, we can. But we were fully transparent with them. So we'll use Webflow, we'll use Framer, we'll use, you know, Notion and Airtable and everything. I don't want to reinvent the wheel.
Got you.
I want to deliver a solution.
Got you. Okay, this is, thanks, that's really clear. This is a sort of wider question, a really big question actually, but I'll ask it. How does your startup change the world?
We change the world because we give students work experience before they graduate, and we don't say to them, hey, listen, do 4 years of a degree, go work in some supermarket stacking shelves, and when you graduate, then you can start making money and getting real world experience. Software engineering is a field where you need practical experience. It's like medicine, it's like plumbing, it's a hands-on thing. If you give me a software engineer that's never touched a database, never logged into a server, never messed up something somewhere, I don't want them anywhere near my software. It's like a doctor. I'm not going to let a doctor operate on me that's never had any practical experience.
Yeah.
So I'm saying the way the education system is set up right now for software engineers is wrong.
Yeah,
there's placements and internships, but the majority of these students are pumped through a process whereby at the end of it, they're told, here's a shiny little piece of paper.
Yeah.
No, good luck and go out and get a job.
Makes me think that you've almost got two customers. On the one hand, you've got the people who want to sort of build those prototypes or commission the building of it. On the other hand, you've got you're always kind of doing sort of economic development on the fly.
We're disrupting education, but we're also bringing people onto the first rung of this digital transformation ladder that everyone's always banging on about.
Yeah,
we're bringing them on at a cost-effective rate. So we're solving two problems.
Got you. Cool. No, very interesting. Thanks. Omar, next question. What excites you the most about the space you're in?
Tech, man. What is it not to like? It's amazing. It's sci-fi, it's the future. It's like AI and robots and what is there not to like about it? Tech is amazing. Where do I even start with that thing? If you've seen a few sci-fi movies, the tech is just cool. Technology is like, it's not just computers and whatnot. It goes right back to fire. Technology changes communities and societies, and it changes humanity, and it changes things, as Jobs used to say, right? It changes everything.
So I can put you firmly in the tech optimism box then.
No, I'm not like one. I'm not a tech, I'm not thinking of a tech utopia. Tech doesn't solve everything. It's a tool, right? I'm not going to say, oh, here, use this shiny little thing. It's going to solve all your economic and societal problems. No, it's a tool. It's a one thing that can solve a lot of things, but it's not a one thing to solve everything.
Interesting. What would your thesis be of the future of the space that you're building in? What do you think is going to happen in that space?
I think the traditional way of... So the workforce of the future...
I guess there's two parts. What do you think is going to happen in the space of building prototypes?
Mm-hmm.
Part one. Part two, what do you think the future of students learning how to code, CS students?
Yeah, let's start with that second one first.
Okay, cool.
I think the way it's currently done is broken, in that universities take hundreds of students in to these programs. They teach them what they think is relevant for industry. I've got a lot of colleagues in university. I'm not going to really like this, but it's the reality, right? In that the question really is, are universities the best place for this workforce of the future? Mm-hmm. Are there other ways that people can learn to be productive and contribute to that workforce of the future? And we know there are, right? You don't have to go to university to be able to build software. In fact, a lot of companies you know now, and a lot of people know, don't even need a degree now. Show me what you can make, what you can build. Show me your portfolio. Show me your passion. Boom, you're in. And so that traditional route through university for software engineers and computing scientists, I think that is going to change massively. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be going into like the theoretical side of things, research, yeah, cool. Go to uni, go and learn from people who are already academics. They can teach you to be an academic. But are academics really the right people to teach you to be someone who's productive in industry? I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's one part of the puzzle, but I think what's missing is the practical experience side of things. And that's where we're coming in the game, trying to give students paid work experience, but also solving a problem whereby there are not enough people out there who are able to build these early version ideas.
Yeah, yeah. No, really interesting. I think universities are starting to see what you're saying as well. And I think they're sort of changing how they're looking at the world. But yeah, it takes all sorts of prompts and et cetera to make that happen. And what do you think about the future of creating from, you know, going from PowerPoint to prototype?
Well, there's loads of ways
Trademark
to go from...
Omar.
I know, exactly right. There's loads of ways to go from an idea to an initial tangible thing. And that's the thing with software. It's not just, so some people have that big bang approach. Let's build this thing in stealth, 6 months, 12 months, and then we'll release it upon the world and they'll all fall at our feet. And we've seen that work, not work again and again and again, because it doesn't. You could pump millions, billions into that strategy. It's the wrong way to do things. The lean startup though, where you go with a messy kind of Darwinian an evolutionary kind of approach, where you go, what's the idea? What's the essence of this thing? How can we put that into a format that shows that thing beyond just a scribble on a whiteboard or a verbal presentation? How do you deliver that to the market? How do you build that thing? How do you guide customers through that process so that they've got the thing that they can then take to the market? And then go, what do you think? Is this an interesting thing or is this just a waste of time? Oh, right, you like this, you don't like that. And then you iterate. And that spiral process is what we bring also to the table, in that, yeah, we know how to build tech, but the way you build tech is just as important as what you build.
Yeah. And do you maybe want to talk a little bit about what you think the role of AI, no code, those kind of new developments could be in that space?
Yeah, I've got a subscription to ChatGPT. Is that good? I don't have a subscription to a lot of things, but that I make an exception for, right? I use Trello to death.
Yeah.
I still don't subscribe to it.
Yeah, I know exactly what you
mean.
You
know what I mean,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, but I make an exception for ChatGPT because that is a bloody useful tool. Is it going to replace humans? Is it going to wipe us out? Man, I don't want to get into that kind of like AI versus humanity thing. I think we're going to find a balance. There's going to be an initial immediate disruption to our economic and societal way of doing things. But eventually, as with any technology, there'll be a symbiotic relationship we'll have, as we have with any technology. We'll adapt, society will adapt, new jobs will be created, we'll get rid of horses, we'll start using cars, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so there'll be new jobs like prompt engineer and all those kind of things that you've seen. And so AI, it's just another technology. Yeah, it's going to have a massive impact, right? I don't know how that's going to pan out. We do need to be careful. There are a lot of like negative side effects that can take place here. Mm-hmm. But I'm happy AI is here. Mm-hmm. And we just need to be careful about how it's regulated and whatnot, as with anything else. Mm. But do I want to put it back in a bag? No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't think that's possible.
It's not even possible. It's out there.
Yeah. Cool. To be honest with you, I find it really hard to get my head around it, to be brutally honest. Next question. What would you say are the most exciting developments in your space?
The most exciting developments? I think what's most exciting is that the students that we work with, they consume and live digital every day. Mm-hmm. And I find just being around them exhilarating because they are at the cutting edge. They live that world. They're not just in it for 9 to 5. That is their world. And they are best placed to build the future, build the tools, build the platforms. And so just working with them is the most exciting thing for me.
It's fascinating that you're taking the kind of human-centric piece being the exciting bit and not going, hey, you know, Stephen, I think ChatGPT connecting with code or whatever.
It's always got to come back to the humans, man.
Cool. Thanks. Okay, next question. Do you think you've got product market fit?
No. And I think that is a process as well, whereby we have learned, I think it's almost like a jigsaw piece. You're trying to like find out what the market wants, and it's almost like you're blindfolded, right? Mm-hmm. But you can hear and you can see, you've got certain like metrics, how many people are buying this thing, how many people have rejected my call, who else is in the market. And you pick up these things and you become smarter. Yeah. And then you learn to hopefully find product market fit. Because if you don't find product market fit, then you need to pivot and do something else. But I think what we're doing, we have found that I think you're never going to jump into the market and hit the bullseye.
No.
In the first go. You've got to be brave enough and go, here's this thing I've got, is it interesting?
Yeah.
And then iterate on those interesting aspects, and that's finding product market fit.
I love that metaphor of being sort of blind, but you can sort of hear, sense things.
You can feel things.
Yeah. Very cool. Who's your ideal customer?
My ideal customer? Anyone that's willing to pay? Sorry, I'm kind of being tongue-in-cheek there. Customer for me is someone who has a really early stage idea, yeah, but has no avenue to realize it. I love being that platform for that person to take their idea and realize it for them and see the excitement when they see their vision being realized. Mm. There's nothing like that. For me, just from a personal excitement point of view, that's exhilarating. And I see that again and again and again when people go, oh, that's amazing.
So it's a kind of, your existing sort of customer base, would these mostly be, is it organizations, is it individuals, is it people who want to build startups themselves?
Startup founders who don't have tech capability within their current team, people in universities, researchers who have like an expertise in a certain domain, but don't have the ability nor the interest to realize that, say, through a software tool. That's probably predominantly our customer base right now. But with larger corporations, we're seeing talent pipelines being of interest to them. How do they access not just one university, but multiple universities? In fact, there was a company who messaged me and said, listen, I don't want to go putting up jobs on every single job board in every uni. I don't want to go the LinkedIn route and get recruiters spamming me. Have you got anyone that kind of fits this job description? I said, send it over to me. Literally in 2 days, he got someone, interviewed them, and they're working in the company. And I thought, that's a game changer right there to me in terms of there's a recruitment process that's currently broken.
Yeah.
And we kind of solve that cause. We are multi-university and we're able to create teams. So I've got a project right now that has got students from St. Andrews, Strathclyde, and Heriot-Watt. So we're creating these multi like cross university teams, where Heddy at Watt have got an amazing digital design program, St Andrews and Strathclyde have got great software engineers, and we're creating these cross country teams. Who else is going to do that? A single university can't, but we're doing it and giving these students that experience of working on projects with students from other unis and with real customers.
Man, that's amazing, amazing, amazing. Really, really impressive. Yeah, I guess.
And this is with a customer in London.
Yeah, well, no, very, very cool. Very cool, very cool. What one big thing would help you most?
I think right now our customer base has come through just word of mouth and me just spamming LinkedIn. And it needs to grow beyond that. So we've got an initial product market fit, but I know there's a lot of room for improvement in terms of there's this resource, these students, they're able to build products, but they're able to do a lot of other things, right? They're able to tutor, they're able to go in and teach something, they're able to go in and do a little bit of consulting or get feedback on a digital marketing campaign. So I think the resource is there, it has not been tapped at all. And so, what was your question again?
No, what one big thing would help you most?
Oh yeah, getting the word out further.
Yeah.
Getting more customers to try this. And it's not even expensive. It's like 2 to 5K. We can change a company. We can change our business. We can change your processes. This company in London, for example, they're a waste management company that deal with like boots and whatnot. And they pick up like stuff that will go to the tip and they upcycle it and recycle it and all that kind of stuff. They were literally using WhatsApp to manage a company. They did a multi-million pound company, but you know, one WhatsApp group became two, became three, became four. They've got contractors up and down the country. Mm-hmm. And then they eventually had 40 WhatsApp groups and they're running the company off spreadsheets and WhatsApp groups. Yeah. That's not going to scale.
Yeah, yeah.
So now we're building them a solution. We've literally used two students over 12 weeks to build them a portal that automates a lot of this. Now it's in our phase two.
Yeah.
And then it's going to go into phase three. But we need more customers and we need people to go, here's an interesting option from what has traditionally been available to us. Let's take a punt on this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Building from that, in 5 years, you sort of close your eyes. Where do you see yourself? How many people are working for this company? What is your turnover?
So that's
I love asking people this question.
Yeah.
Because it's a really hard question, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it unearths people's kind of ambitions and their soul somehow.
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm coming from.
So I'm a you know, all on or all off kind of person. It's zero or it's 100 for me. So if I'm going to do something, it's all in or it's nothing. And so if I'm doing this thing, I'm going to try and take it to the moon. And there will be a physical limit that I hit, saturated the market or I've done this or done that. But whatever that limit is, I don't know what it is right now. So I'm aiming beyond whatever that limit is. And so I think if this works in Scotland, and it already has, to the point where we're profitable, mm-hmm. right? I need to scale it up. I need to get the word out more. I need to automate a lot of the things that we're doing. I need to standardize a lot of the things that we're doing. That whole thing that Paul Graham from Y Combinator says, do things that don't scale. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that. I'm burning a candle at both ends. Mm-hmm. And I know software can solve a lot of my own problems, mm-hmm. but I don't want to optimize things before I've even got product or any semblance of product market fit.
Sure.
So what I'm trying to do right now is just increase the momentum, get more projects in. And I think it's going to work in Scotland, then it works in England. So here's some stats. There's 10,000 students in higher education computing subjects in Scotland. Mm-hmm. It's about 80,000 in England, about 5 in Wales, and about 5 in Northern Ireland. You've got about 100,000 students who are just sitting there stacking shelves. Mm-hmm. I'm saying use that resource to digitally transform businesses in those localities. So every university has a local ecosystem, whether it's Glasgow, Edinburgh, St Andrews, Dundee, Aberdeen, you know, Leeds, Manchester, London. I want to scale it up and down the country and then across the world, because I think it disrupts the way we teach the future workforce. So if we're like, oh, AI is going to take our jobs. Yeah, it is. What are you doing about it? Like, are you putting these students through these four-year programs and saying only after 4 years can they contribute to the economy? And even then, it takes them 6 months to 12 months to really learn what the real world is all about, because university is everything but the real world, right?
Yeah, I think a dear friend of mine who's very, very smart one of the smartest people I know, she told me that if you think about it, the university students are almost like a kind of sovereign wealth fund right. in Scotland, because you've got really smart people who get, if you're Scottish, free education
yeah.
at the highest level.
Yeah.
So I think that's really true. And I think we need to take advantage of that. And I think universities will get there. I think universities will be open to change.
Yeah.
But how many people are going to work for you in 5 years?
In 5 years, if this goes according to my hopes and dreams, tens of thousands of students will be going through this.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What are the bottlenecks for your growth? What are the blockers?
I suppose just creating awareness in the market that this is a way to do things.
Yeah.
This is a way to resource software. And it doesn't have to be like custom built, like you said. There's no core solutions out there. But someone said to me, I don't know where to start. There's just so much out there. Someone's asking me, how can I learn a program? I said, jump on YouTube.
Yeah.
What programming language should I learn? What about this? What about that? There's so many things I take for granted being in the space as a tech, you know, person. That people who are not in that space, they just don't know where to start. What no-code tool should I use? What platform? What am I going to be locked in if I use Bubble or something else?
Yeah, yeah.
Where are the constraints? So it's like the bottleneck is just creating awareness in the market that this is another option that exists. The talent is under our noses here in Scotland. Why are we not using them?
Cool.
And some of these students... You will not be able to use once they graduate, because they're going to go to Barclays, they're going to go to JP, they're going to go to Google and Apple, and you're not going to be able to work with them. And I'm saying those same students that are doing internships and whatnot in Apple, you can work with them right now, and they will have a game-changing effect on your business. And these are the tech leaders of the future. Access them now while you can.
Cool. So I've got four more questions.
Help me.
That are about startup culture.
Right.
And they actually might be a nice lead-in to the extra conversation we're going to have at the end of this.
Cool.
So I'll start with those. What's your... I'm just saying that because you might already weave in some of the stuff.
Sure.
You might. So what's your favourite thing about startup culture?
Possibility. If I were to put it into one word, startups to me are pure possibility. I don't know what to say other than that. You know... You decide the constraints. You decide how you're positioned in this thing. You decide the product or the service. You decide the team. It's just pure open possibility. And then eventually you will come into some hard realities. The market responds in a certain way. Competitors, product, blah, blah, blah. But it's almost like a newborn child. That's what a startup is. It's pure possibility.
Yeah, nice. Nice, nice, nice answer. What's your least favourite thing about startup culture?
Least favourite? This is going to be a hard one. Because even the bad things, I think, are good things.
I mean, I guess I'm not just talking about, like, a startup as mm-hmm. a concept of doing something new.
Yeah.
Specifically the culture.
A startup is like a newborn. You shape it. You decide the culture. So what I love about startups is that you've got business to it. You've got creativity. You've got technology. You've got... culture is this kind of intangible thing, but it exists and it influences how the company operates. I love that, you know, creating culture in the psychology of people. How do you intrinsically motivate them? How do you position a team? How do you execute? How do you strategize?
Yeah.
Everything. So there's nothing bad there. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. What are your least favorite bits? Just more favorite bits.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. That's cool. I understand. It, you know, it's a kind of privileged space to be in if you think about it, right? It's a cool,
it's amazing, a cool place
to be. Okay. Now, this is my favorite question, but it might be a bit to me or something. So,
right. So
feel free to push back. Are there any earned secrets or any bits of advice you've got for other founders? Anything? Earned secrets are kind of, I think it's an Andreessen Horowitz thing.
Mm.
The example is that the Airbnb people, their earned secret was they worked out building Airbnb by asking themselves the question, what was the hotel world or the staying over somewhere world, staying, sleeping outside of your house world.
Yeah.
What was that like before there were hotels?
All right.
And sort of took it from that direction and said, you know, we're going to see the world through that lens. And that is, looking at the world that way has unlocked a bunch of secrets for us that you wouldn't normally take for granted.
Yeah.
That you would normally take for granted. And those are the ones we have. So is there any kind of particular to you, particular to Lupcio kind of stuff that you went through?
Yeah.
That might seem contrarian or odd or at odds with the normal sort of narrative that you think is interesting that could filter into being kind of advice for other founders.
Something I've learnt along the way that's now possible advice for other people and referencing the Airbnb. So that was like an insight they hit upon that helped them then position the service and the product in a certain way outside that traditional hotel way of looking at things.
I just get that as guidance. It needn't you know, colour your answer, but just as an example, is there any kind of thing that you've come across that you perhaps wouldn't have expected going into it, but now have sort of realised and think that's the one thing you would say to other founders who want to do something?
Yeah.
Like, this is the one the one weird trick that doctors hate.
To success?
Yeah, yeah. No, just to building a startup, just being in the game.
You know, when I was thinking of doing this, I had a day job. And I still do have a day job. This is not my full-time thing. But I'm evolving towards making this my full-time thing because, for me, this is my day and night and my obsession. And my day job, when I said to my supervisor that I initially said to him, I'm quitting. I'm out of here because I'm going to go do this thing. Mm-hmm. And the analogy that I used for them was, I'm at this cliff edge and I don't want to remain where I am in this day job, which is a 9-to-5 and Monday to Friday. To me, that existence is just killing me inside. I want to do something that consumes me. I have energy inside that I need to channel into something. And this day job isn't that, because the return on investment on this day job is nothing there. If I go 200% or 500%, I'm still getting that flatline salary. And it's not just about the salary, it's about recognition, getting to work with people, making an impact in the world. I'm a cog in a big thing. And so I need to leave. And to explain the kind of state of mind I was in, I was like, I don't have a parachute, but I'm on this cliff edge. I'm going to jump anyway. And I'm going to figure out how to make a parachute or open the one on the way down. You've heard this many times before. Right? You know, a startup is where you jump out of a plane and you figure out how to build a parachute on the way down. And I think that mentality, a lot of entrepreneurs can, a lot of people are going to go, that's just nuts. Are you off your head? And those people are not entrepreneurs. But the entrepreneurs are going to relate to that because there's a thing that grows inside you that pushes you towards entrepreneurship because you're making a choice of leaving something that's comfortable, that's dependable, that's reliable to something that's full of risk. You don't know whether the market's going to respond to this thing that you're thinking about. It's pure risk. And to me, that spirit is the spirit of people who go out and venture and discover new lands and invent new things. That spirit has been a constant throughout is humanity's, you know, history. And coming back to actually answering your question, my advice would be, listen to that thing inside you that no one else understands and no one else relates to. But it's a risky thing, because how do you know that you're not nuts? Right? How do you know that you've not just completely lost touch with reality? And that's the leap of faith. It's a leap of faith. You could do all the data and pull all the stats and do all the studies and you could still be wrong. Because at the end of the day, it's based on an intuitive sense that the entrepreneur has about the market, the landscape, the competition. Everything's in flux. These things are constantly moving. They're all dynamic. And as an entrepreneur, you're watching this play out and you go, right, see, as these things align here, I'm putting this thing over there, and it might work, it might not work. And I would say, don't put all your hopes on that one shot. Try it again and again and again and again and again. And I know different people have different privileges to be able to take many shots. Some people just have one arrow. Some people have an infinite supply of them. But if you can, if you've got that entrepreneurial spirit, try and take as many shots as you can and just don't give up, I suppose. That's it. Just keep going.
Okay.
Keep moving.
Okay. Cool. Yeah, I agree. So it's so tough. It's there's a bunch of privilege. There's a bunch of like time as well. Like how many, not, it's not just how many arrows, like how many shots do you have? You know, but it's but yeah, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Omar, the last question I have here is there anything else you would like to share with listeners?
Is there anything else? You ask that in a way because you know there is something I want to share.
There is.
And I want to share something, but I want to preface it by saying, well, let's talk about how we came to it. So there was a picture. So this is not an easy conversation. And I'm grateful for having the space to be able to speak about it. But I don't want to be, you know, oh my God, thank you so much for allowing me to speak about this. These are things that need to be spoken about. And it's good that you are sensitive and aware enough that if you don't speak about them, then there's a problem. And so the thing that I was talking about is diversity. And so how this kicked off was that, I mean, again, to preface it by saying, and I know Stephen absolutely hates it when he hears this, but I love what Stephen's doing. And I love what Codebase is doing. And I love how it all kicked off from the Logan Report. And I love what Jamie Coleman and the Coleman brothers. I love what's going on here in this space. I love tech. I love Scotland. And so there was a picture that was put out. So I love all of that, right? And so there was a picture that was put out by the Codebase team on LinkedIn that showed the Codebase team on some retreat or some work day,
yeah,
where they were getting together,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I looked at this picture, and I'm brown, obviously, if you can't tell from my name, but born and bred here in Scotland, right? So I looked at this picture and I thought, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this picture. And then I downloaded the picture and I individually counted how many people were in the picture, as you do. There are 53 people in that picture, and one, maybe at a stretch, two, were people of colour. And obviously, I'm going to look at the world through that lens because I'm a person of colour, right? But when I looked at this picture, my initial reaction was like, nah, come on, Codebase?
Yeah.
There's Stephen, and there's Codebase. And I love Codebase, and I stand behind Codebase, and I'm on the front line with Codebase to spread tech across Scotland and let, you know, Scotland reap the benefits of what I think can come through technology and software and all that kind of stuff. But this ain't the Codebase that Codebase even itself speaks about, and then it talks about itself, because when I go on their website, it's about diversity and inclusivity and all this and that. What is going on with this picture? Am I actually seeing this for real, or am I like missing something here? And so I thought, what am I? My initial reaction was that I was pissed off, and I was going to reply under the post and go in a really sarcastic tone, and I thought, nah, calm down, think about this logically and rationally. Is that going to lead to the response you want? Is that the relationship that you want to build with Codebase? Because here's an organization you think has a massive potential for change in Scotland. I support what they do. And so I don't want to get on a side of them where I'm just throwing shots at them. So I already had been in touch with Stephen, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to message Stephen privately and do this in a civilized way. So I messaged you and said, Stephen, and I took a long time to word that message because I wanted it to come across as sensitive and...
Just, it did, Omar. It did.
Yeah, no, I took a while to craft it.
No, it was well-written.
Because I wanted it to come across in a nice way, in that, Stephen, I love you. I love Codebase. but this ain't cool.
Yeah. Do you know, it's kind of, when I read it, it was horrible to read. It was like, oh, you know.
Stab you in the heart.
Does action of stabbing himself in the heart. But, you know, I'm saying it was well written because it's not fair for us to rely on your eloquence to point this out.
Yeah, I wanted to throw a brick through the window. That was my first reaction.
Yeah.
So, I thought, no.
Yeah. No, so look, anyway, I'll this is for me to shut up and listen.
No, it's not. We're here to have a conversation, but you've said that, you know, there are challenges, which I acknowledge. You know, it's not easy scaling an organisation. It's not easy taking a remit to a whole country. And, you know, you've got 100... It's like a startup. You've got 100 things, 100 fires you're trying to put
out.
Yeah,
we do, but that's not a defence. And you know, let's not go down that route. I don't think
what I'm saying is that I acknowledge there are challenges, but I'm not here to say that's the excuse and let's do nothing. This podcast is the start and end of this conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
This is just a beginning. And so what I'm saying is things need to change. I know you guys have got processes and whatnot in place. They're obviously not working. And why they need to change is because something we spoke about before we started recording this was Scotland's playing in a global game. Tech is not limited to just this wee part of the world. We're playing up against global players here. And if we want to compete, we got to take our A team. And software and tech is not, like we spoke about, a vertical industry. It's a horizontal. And what that means, it cuts across every industry. So it doesn't matter whether you're in finance, education, government, whatever it is, you touch tech in some capacity. And so tech is the fabric of our societies now. And if we're going to say to the world, here, check out our tartan, and it's only built with, you know, a certain subset of society. That was nice, wasn't it? That just came to me there. But if we're going to go to the world and say, here, check out this world-class product built with a very small subset of our country, we've got a very mono, uni-cultured outlook, and we're going to put that on the world stage with, you know, the States and China and India and the Middle East, are you having a laugh?
Yeah.
Right. So I'm saying, I want to win this game. I'm in tech. And if we're going to go to that world level, which I think Scotland has a rightful place there historically. And so if we're going to go there and say, we're a world leader, we're a world leader digitally. We don't just consume tech and repurpose it. We create tech. We take it out. Deep tech, low tech, whatever it is, it's made here in Scotland. But if you want to do that, then you got to bring your A game. And your A game means you need your A players. And they come from all over Scotland. So I'm saying not just a colour diversity, I'm saying a neurodiversity, every diversity. Bring them into this room. Let's create chaos. Let's create products and services. I know this is a family-friendly podcast, so watch my language. But let's do stuff.
Yeah. No, thanks. And I think that energy momentum that you're displaying and talking about is one of the most crucial ingredients to doing good stuff. Omar, I'm really grateful that you've come on the podcast and you've said
so happy to
what
be
you
here.
Said. No, I'm. The thing is, we've known each other for a while, and
yeah.
I think we've always got on well. So this is like, you know, it's just hard to kind of go, oh shit, you know, so I've done it now. We should have done.
But I think
better
that
job.
Is what allowed me to reach out to you.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I think what we really love to get across is that we totally believe that diversity is a strength and a necessary ingredient and a USP and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the what is not in question, the why is not in question. The bit we need to do a better job on is the how. So how do we reach out? For everyone listening to this is just the beginning of this. I hope our heart's in the right place, and I hope it's clear to people but it's not clear, is it? But, you know, we're genuinely trying to make this as diverse a group, and as you said, not just on race, on gender and neurotype, all sorts of places as possible. So any feedback, any comments, any prompts, any help, frankly, we can get will be super, super appreciated. But yeah,
Yeah, you do need help because that picture's going to change, you know, like in Back to the Future where he's got the picture and you need to change that picture. And there are people in that picture that I want to remain in that picture. And I'm going to shout out Mark Sutherland, who I met in Inverness. Absolutely top class guy. I'm so happy he's part of Codebase. I drove three hours just to go see him. I stayed overnight in Inverness just to meet him. And then I met the community, the Codebase community in Inverness. Absolutely amazing. And I want to get into more of that Highland community. So I don't want to take anyone out of the picture. But what I'm saying is that more people need to be included in the picture. And so the analogy is there's this room of tech which has these amazing possibilities. It's the most exciting space to me ever. I don't want to be anywhere other than tech and startups. But I'm like, there's so many other people that would add to the room, but they can't get in the room because they look at the room from the window and they go, oh, no one in there looks like me. And you need to go out and grab those people. It can't be enough to just say, hey, you're welcome. If they see a different reality in the room, they're like, I don't belong there.
Yeah.
That's not my space. They're not my people.
Yeah.
So it's going to be difficult, but you've got people like me and there's other people who are already in the space. Give us a platform. Give us the opportunity to pull people in like us. We're here. I'm here. I'm here talking to you about this. And so it's great that you realize that this is not the way forward. Even just from a competitive, financial, capitalist point of view, it's the wrong strategy. Forget morals and all that kind of the right thing to do, right side of history. Forget all that. Let's just look at the bottom line here. Profit. Business. It's the wrong business strategy. You're not going to win the game with this strategy. So switch it up. And obviously the right thing to do is always the right thing to do. So it's nice if that is in the equation here as well. And I know you want to do the right thing. I know it's in Codebase's DNA to want to do the right thing. And so there's those two aspects. There's a financial strategy and then there's this the right thing to do. And on both of those fronts, I think there's no one fit size. I can't come here and go, here's the key you're missing. Here's the magic ring.
Sure.
Right? But having this conversation and then realizing that you're going to have to make an extra effort to pull these people in. And once, have you seen that video of that guy on the side of the hill? The dancing guy. It's that.
Yeah.
You got to be that outlier on the hill and you've pulled one in and you pull two in. Next thing you know, you've got a revolution on your hands. You've got a movement. But it's building that momentum and that early founder, co-founder, those early people are going to be vital. And then it's exponential from there.
Yeah.
For that video, I love that. I've seen that tons of times. And if people haven't seen it, you go online, YouTube.
We'll put it in the notes.
It's brilliant because it's such a powerful message for founders and startups and people, anyone trying to do anything.
Yeah.
I think end on that. That image of that guy dancing like a loony on the side of the mountain. And then by the end of it, the whole mountain is dancing with him.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
It is a good place to end it. Thanks, man. Thank you. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephen.
Oh, thanks for coming.
Cheers.